Osseo Carrington.
I'm here.
Yay.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
So long time no talk, my friend.
Yes, it's been a little over than a month. How are you?
I'm amazing, although I didn't get to go on a fancy nerd cruise like some people.
I had a great nerd cruise. It was so nerdy, and I even got to do some interactive fictioning on the cruise.
We got an email from somebody who found out about our podcast from a postcard about our podcast that they saw at the cruise, I think?
Yes,
You've been marketing for us. It's amazing.
Yeah, I did marketing. So I went on the Joko Cruise, which is best described as, officially it's a fan cruise for fans of the musician Jonathan Coulton, but really it's best described as Comic-Con on a boat. And I go every year, and it's a general nerdery and stuff, and I brought some, I had some beautiful postcards printed up that you designed. Thank you, Carrington. And brought them and left them around in appropriate places. So, yeah, basically I spent $70 to get a new listener, I think, is what happened.
That's going to be a pretty expensive way to raise our listenership.
Yeah, I know. I don't.
And
know
no, dear listener, that does not mean you can write in for your $70.
No. No, you cannot.
But you can write in with your $70.
That's true, yes. You owe us $70.
Yeah, you know who you are.
So this game I played was—I don't know if you've ever played a interactive fiction game in
yes.
real life.
Like a LARP?
I think the kind of the generic term. I don't know if this is a generic term or if this is a trademarked term, but it's called like a Parsley Adventure.
Oh, I have. Ken, friend of the show and friend of us, Ken Gagne. He does them at Kansas Fest.
Yes. Yeah, so basically this is basically you get maybe between 10 and 20 people sitting around in a room, and one person is the narrator or the parser and will read or describe to you your situation. And in turn, the people in the room say, go north or, you know, take the...
The next person says, go south.
Exactly, that happens sometimes, north. Yeah. So yeah, the people take turns and collaboratively try to solve the adventure. And there was a gentleman there who had created one, and the game was called Exits Are Out, Escape Station. And I don't think this is a thing that he has published yet, but he said we were the seventh group to have played this game with him being the narrator in, you know, various groups that he's been with and things. And we played the game, and it was super a lot of fun, super enjoyed it. At the very beginning, he was just like, "All right, so this is a game in the style of Zork," and he was going to explain it. And someone raised their hand and was just like, "What's Zork?" So like, wow. Oh.
I thought somebody was going to raise their hand and go, "Do you know what cruise you're on?" Please.
Yeah. Right. But I think by the end of that couple hours, that person might not have known what Zork specifically was, but certainly understood what an interactive fiction game was. Anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Did you fold a postcard into a paper airplane and zip it at the guy?
No, I did not. No, I handed out the postcards at the end of the...
See, that's why you have to give out the postcards. I would be much more violent about it.
No, you wouldn't. You're a pussy cat.
I'm a Canadian kid. I've learned to flick hockey cards. I can ping people with these things from some distance. Mm.
Sounds dangerous.
Canuck style.
I had a good cruise, and I played that game and handed out some postcards, so maybe we'll get a couple more listeners. What about you? What have you been up to?
I have a cold, so if you can hear it in my various head bits, they're all upset at me at the moment. So boo to that, but mostly just work, which is probably why I have a cold. Many weekends in a row of working, so much working, too much working, not enough gaming. must get new lifestyle. Oh, and today is my birthday, so happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, Carrington. How old are you? Can I ask that?
I'm like 900.
Wow.
I think late 40s is the same as 900. you turn 47, it's the same as 900, so I round.
Sure. That makes sense. Well, happy birthday. I'm happy to spend a little bit of your birthday with you.
Yes, me and my cold and my birthday. Crappy birthday to me. although awesome to be talking about these Infocom games, and because I'm eagerly looking forward to talking about Enchanter, this episode's game, and eager looking forward to picking another one so I can have more to play. If I'm going to be sick and home for the weekend, then I want an Infocom game.
Oh, that's true. That's a good way to spend spend some sick time. Absolutely.
Spend some sick time.
Sick time. We have some sick time with Infocom games. Cool. Should we? You want to jump into recent mail?
We got some let's do it. We did get great. We get terrific feedback. Oh, I forgot to write down anything that was sent by Twitter. I actually prefer it when people send Twitter, and I'm always forgetting to write any of it down to respond. So sorry, Twitter people, but I love it when you twit to us.
Yes, we enjoy it, and yet you are less likely to be read on that.
I'm going to change that for next show. I'll show you. I'm going to read tweets.
All right, excellent. Well, you know, everyone does a hashtag eaten by a Gru, which is not really that use that often. So if you did that search right now, Carrington, I bet you could find the good tweets.
Sounds like a lot of work.
I know. I got to open a browser window and type like 20 characters.
Do you forget who you're podcasting with?
I do not.
We get email from people and I read it and I'm like, oh, that's lovely. I wonder when Kevin will write back. And then you write back. And I'm like, all is right with the world and I have to do nothing.
I don't like, I mean, I'll tell you definitively, I have not had inbox zero since August 2nd, 2015, when Rob McMullen sent me a message that I haven't dealt with yet. But I like the idea of getting stuff out of my inbox, so I tend to respond to emails quickly, unless, you know, you're Rob, in which case you're waiting almost 2 years for a response. So
I have outbox zero.
Nice.
Yep. And it's easy to inbox zero. I mean... Command A, delete.
Yep.
I declare email bankruptcy like a couple times a year. It'll get to the point where I've got 200 unread messages, and I'm like, you know what? They'll write back. I just delete everything.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I should do that.
Works well for me.
Let's see. Josh Malone wrote to us and said, "Hi, Kevin. Hi, Carrington. I've been listening since episode one. I have enjoyed every one of them. I love the style you guys have fallen into. The podcast is a great listen. Thank you both."
We have style.
Yes, we got style.
Cool.
Podcast style. I always thought interactive fiction games were really cool, despite having played relatively few of them and completing only one that I can remember. When I finished listening to episode one, I decided that I would follow along next time and play Ballyhoo. Well, I finally decided that text adventures just aren't my bag. I'm really into point and click adventures, and I've completed lots of them, but for some reason I just can't get into these. I don't know. I played Lost Pig a few years ago and liked that one, but I'm not really enjoying the Infocom games. As I mentioned to someone on Twitter recently, I'm just going to experience them vicariously through your show, and that's perfectly fine with me. So bring on the spoilers. I wanted to comment on a few things from this episode. First, the alternate opening theme got plenty of chuckles when I heard it. I don't know what he's talking about. Second, the 69 in 69,105 has another legacy in adventure gaming. All the LFL files in LucasArts games were XOR'd with Hex 69. Ron Gilbert jokes about this on the Thimbleweed Park site. Finally, the mention of In Search of the Most Amazing Thing inspired me to look it up, and lo and behold, it's a game by Tom Snyder, who authored a couple of my favorite childhood video games, Banner Catch and Agent USA. Banner Catch, in particular, still holds a place in my heart, having had the brilliance to introduce kids to the binary number system by wiretapping communications between their robotic opponents. Nice. Thank you, Josh.
That's awesome. And I think it is a totally valid thing to say you're not super into like the actual playing of Infocom games. They take a lot of time. They can be frustrating. I get it. But you still might be really interested in just getting an overview and hearing what the plot's like, what are the things. Like, sort of, I think going through it vicariously is just as valid as playing along with us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm still going to play them.
I can totally this be like, I can see, I mean, there's all sorts of things in my life where I like the idea of it, and I like that other people do it, but I have no interest in it. You know, I'm not going to go ice skating or rock climbing, but you have your fun. And I will listen to your ice skating rock climbing podcast.
Will you?
Maybe. I'll try it.
Subscribed.
Do you want to read a letter?
Sure, I will read a letter. Here's one from Will. Will, via email. Hey, I love the podcast. I played many Infocom games as a kid in the 1980s and will occasionally find them to play again. And this podcast has inspired me to play them yet again along with you guys. I liked that you invest real time and effort to play the games on their own terms, and I like how well you remember the turning point moments, both in terms of the story and what you enjoy or not enjoy the games. I love examining how each game starts. This is such a crucial part of the game, both for introducing that particular game, but also getting players attuned to playing interactive fiction. This is one area where I think Zork is underrated. It has an excellent opening sequence, not in terms of story, but in terms of giving you a few simple things to do to get used to the parser and the partner, and then rapidly expanding the world. I believe this opening is one of the main reasons for this game's success through the 80s and really beyond. The first room in Zork has a mailbox, a leaflet, and a welcome mat, all of which respond to you manipulating them and looking at them. You naturally walk around the house and spoilery stuff, but you know it, the thing does what you think the thing would do. To veteran IF players, this is all nothing. But to someone new to IF, this is like putting on a VR headset and hang gliding off a cliff. You get a sense of, oh, this is working. I've shown several friends of mine Zork over the years, and they all get into the house with no coaching or instruction. That's actually a lot further than a lot of other better parser games do for newbies. Ballyhoo, a much better game overall, one could argue, has a much more confusing beginning. So does Trinity. And although those are each very good opening sequences in terms of setting up the story. When you, very shortly after, find the dungeon in Zork, your mind is blown, and several more times through the game, the world of Zork expands greatly. Sure, Zork has unfair puzzles, a lack of storyline, and two boring mazes, but Zork excels at the very basic fun of picking up stuff and moving around a bit in a well-described world. And the opening sequence for someone new to IF demonstrates that strength. This email is already too long, but I also think that Sea Stalker has an excellent opening sequence. The game doesn't hold up, but I think it is a very promising start. Thanks for doing the podcast. I'm going to go start Enchanter. Well, the first time since eighth grade. Excellent email. And I thought a really good point that he made. I thought, so that's why I wanted to read the email, because I thought that was well put and a well-made point.
Yes. I've been actually thought about this message several times since we received it. And it's like it's like the opening scene of a movie. I mean, it really sets the stage, tells you what you're going to expect in the game. And yeah, those first few words that you read, even before the title, you know, normally you start these games and it gives you a couple paragraphs of opening setup, and then it says the name of the game and all that stuff. And I mean, that's set in the scene. That's important.
Mm-hmm. I still think Zork is a bad game to start with. Great opening, but too hard for someone's first game.
Yes.
And too hard for me for any point.
Nathan Simpson wrote in again. He's the guy who does the Infocom Bugs website, or one of them at least. He said, it was exciting to get a sixth episode so soon after I discovered Eaten by a Gru. I'm glad you're trying to play these games in the way they were intended, over time, with real thought and effort. I think you're discovering how much more enjoyable that is, even if you do eventually go for the hints. I don't think Infocom Text Adventures got much harder than Deadline. It's definitely the hardest of the mysteries, so don't feel bad about cheating, in quotes. It also has some fun bugs to play around with. I can answer Sebastian's question about non-English versions. Infocom was actually working on a German translation of Zork 1 at the end. Two pre-release versions are out there in the wild. Which reminds me, have you played Paul David Doherty's have you read Paul David Doherty's Infocom fact sheet? And he gives the link for that. That is a document that I use, I think Carrington and I both use regularly when we need information about games. It's a fantastic authoritative source for data about Infocom games, and it's spoiler-free. I shared a Border Zone bug with Nathan, and he thanked me for sharing it, and he was trying it out, and it was a bug he didn't know about, and then he found two more related bugs. So that's kind of fun. Love that. He says, so far you haven't discussed which actual versions of the games you're playing. Because of the virtual machine they use, the version of the story file is the version of the story file is more important than which computer or interpreter you use. After the very first early releases, every Infocom story file includes a release number and a serial number that gives you the date it was compiled. If you miss it on the opening banner, you can get that information with the version command. Most differences between versions are minor, but I found a number of interesting bugs by checking out what was changed between versions. Usually the best version to play is the last one. A notable exception is Sorcerer. You should play release 15 instead of 18, which is weirdly buggy. Five of the bestsellers were re-released as so-called solid gold versions, which used a more advanced Z Machine version and built-in hints. I can recommend those, except the solid gold version of Planetfall. Release 37 is better. So there, that's an Infocom nerd for you right there.
Totally. And I'm like, how will I remember this? How will I remember this?
Yeah, yeah. Not gonna.
I think that's
that.
A good point about mentioning what versions of things we work on. For Enchanter, I played on an actual disc. I have the nice folio edition of Enchanter for the Apple II, so I played on regular old floppy. But a lot of these games are going to be playing on emulation, so I'll try to look going forward at what version I am using.
Great. Yeah, I played Enchanter using Zoom, using version. I think I have all the games on CD-ROM. Lost Treasures, or I think it's like the Adventure Collection, the Comedy Collection, that sort of thing. And so I just transferred those files off the CD-ROM, and I think I played the CD-ROM version. Would you like to read another?
Sure.
Sure.
Yes. In your last email, you talked about non-English things, mm-hmm. and we got the most lovely and flattering email from Sergey, who wrote, I hugely appreciate your Eaten by a Groove podcast. My first interactive fiction game I played were Lost Pig, Spider and Web, Photopia, and Anchorhead. I decided to play the Infocom ones then, but heard that even Zork, the series, is rather difficult. Planetfall was my choice to try it first, but it really is a much bigger game. I started to use interactive fiction mappers to help with it. I met, spoilers, so I'll skip that bit. But then he writes, but I returned to Planetfall and took into account at least Trinity after listening to your podcast. You are the only one whose podcast I listen to. I'm a programmer and I know there are plenty of various IT, internet, programming, and hacking related podcasts.
This guy needs to get out more.
Interesting to me. No, he's awesome. He's my favorite guy. Send him $70. I prefer to read the text articles, but your podcast is the single exception. And then he says, after your podcast, I plan to spend my free time working on those wonderful interactive fiction games. English is not my native language. I am Russian, so sometimes I surrender and look for hints. But anyway, it is worth it. It is worth it. And what a lovely email and lovely sentiment.
Very nice.
Send him $70.
I can't.
Send him a postcard.
Maybe. We'll see about that.
Put him on a cruise. Anyway, that was so nice. What a lovely thing to write.
Very nice.
Really, there are so many better podcasts out there. Not about Infocom, of course.
No. John Kelly wrote in with a short email. He said, I'm currently in the midst of playing Leather Goddesses of Phobos as my first Infocom adventure. I'm wondering if you had any plans of discussing that game anytime in the future. We've gotten emails like this and tweets like this several times. Are you going to play?
We've done a very bad job of explaining our podcast.
Yes, we've done a very bad job of explaining this. And that's probably on me. So here's what we do in this podcast. We intend to play every Infocom game on this podcast. There were 36 canonical Infocom text adventure games, or some of them graphic adventure games. We intend to play them all at a rate of about once a month, so this podcast is a three-year adventure. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we will play Leather Goddesses of Phobos and Hitchhikers and whatever your favorite game is. I can't tell you when, because the order we do them is completely up to our whims.
Oh, although we did get a couple of people pointing out that if we choose the next game at the end of the show, which means it's well past the spoiler fence, and if you don't go past that, you don't get to know what the next show is. And so I'm going to start putting the next show choice in the show notes. And I'll probably go and retroactively put it back in the show notes from earlier games. So if you have joined us late and you've always seen the next show choice in the show notes, it really only started as of this episode, and I'm going to retcon it. But going forward, not only will we tweet the next one, but if you don't follow us on Twitter and you just listen to the podcast, which is totally valid, then you should be able to look in the description of the episode, and down at the bottom somewhere, I will put in the description what next episode's show will be. Because we don't know it by the time we hit the spoiler fence, because we literally haven't chosen it. We do this show live, Daddy-O.
That's right.
And it's at the very end, we just, by whim, pick another game.
Sure. Yeah, and also if you follow us on Twitter, which you should, because we're hilarious and wonderful.
I in particular, very witty.
We also tweet out what the game is.
Hashtag and spoilers.
Eaten by a group. Yeah. Man, let's do one more. I still have more interest. I've tagged the interesting mail, and there's just so much of it. And
we get a lot. Our listeners are awesome, and they write us very interesting things.
Yeah, they do. All right, I'm going to read Jeanland Thompson's message. He said, "What? You want to read it?"
I knew him as a listener from another podcast I did. I was excited to get email from him. I'm like, "Oh, you followed me over from No Quarter. Excellent,
excellent." Very cool. He says, greetings, programs. Although I was a big fan of Text Adventures back in the day, no fancy interactive fiction for us back then. I wasn't very good at them, possibly because younger me didn't have older me's vocabulary, possibly because English isn't my native language. That being said, I recall getting copies of Hitchhiker's Guide and Lurking Horror from friends, but since none of the kids in the neighborhood had ever seen an original Infocom game, we had no idea what we were missing out on. That we were missing out on crucial information from the Feelies. Later on, I borrowed properly boxed copies of Magnetic Scrolls, The Pawn, and The Guild of Thieves from a friend, but never got very far into them before I had to give them back. But the urge to go back to these Infocom games has been with me for a long time. I've had Zoom installed on my Mac for ages, and as soon as Lost Treasures of Infocom came out, I downloaded it to my iPad. And I bought Jason Scott's excellent Git lamp. I, too, am a Git person on DVD. But I still didn't get around to playing the games. That is until I heard your episode on Zork. Long had I wanted to play that one. So I stopped at the spoiler fence, installed Lectrode, got the game running, brought out the old graph paper, and started mapping like it was 1982. Like it. Sadly, Lectrode... I'm not familiar with Lectrode, stopped working around the time the latest Mac OS update came out. But I just noticed that Andrew Plotkin released an update 5 days ago, so I'm heading back soon. I agree that Zork is probably not the best game to restart my Infocom career with, but I'm sticking with it for now since it was their first release. Looking forward to your episodes on Hitchhikers and Lurking Horror. As an aside, and then he did some geeky stuff about MP3 chapter markers that I didn't understand, but you seemed excited by it. So,
gonna add those two. Our listeners make the show better, and also they kind of give it a reason for existing. Actually, no. Frankly, the reason is just to play the games.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do this for to play the games and for a chance to talk to you for an hour. It's
play the games.
That's all I need.
Release the games.
Shall
we talk about one of the games?
Shall we talk about
the one we played?
Yes, let's talk.
Because we played a game with spells.
Yes, we did. We played Enchanter, which was released in 1983. And it's a good game by Mark Lank and Dave Lebling.
It is a super good game. Mm. I really, really liked it. The packaging is awesome. I like the fantasy elements. Felt very much like a Zork game. In fact, I see in the notes here that this was originally going to be Zork 4.
Right, their working title was Zork 4, yes.
Because it has a real Zorkness to it, because it's in a fantasy setting, and it's, you know, a lot of the explore the spooky castle vibe going on, but it adds to it the big difference of having spells that you can cast. And so it's got a whole, like, RPG element.
Yes, yes it does. And it's different from Zork, and I don't think this is a spoiler in any way, in that it's not geared toward, you're not out there to collect treasure. In fact, that's sort of the opposite. There's a problem you need to solve, you need to, you know, vanquish the evil wizard, and that's what you're focused on. And although there's treasures around, you kind of don't need it, you don't want it, you know. So it's a very different sort of game, even though it's maybe in the same universe. I loved this game. I really enjoyed it.
100% agree. Strong agree. I thought this was fantastic. It was sort of like the Zork that I wanted Zork to be. It had all the Zork stuff that I liked, added a whole bunch of other things that I really liked. I liked the writing. I liked the humor in it. I really liked the puzzles. Everything about this was a win. Loved this game.
Yes, yeah. This is really maybe my favorite, or definitely at least one of my favorites that we have played. It's very Zork-like, but I think Infocom had gotten their footing, you know, at this point, and they could tell a story. The parser works well, and everything. Let's talk about the box and stuff before we get too far in, and the box and feelies and all that good stuff.
I reached it. Woohoo! Go me.
You got it. Excellent.
Go gadget reaching arms.
So you played, you got an actual box you played on your Apple?
I do, and I have like the folio, like the first one, so really beat up. Like I have a remarkably beat up folio version. So this game, unlike the gray box versions, and there was a gray box version of this that came later, so it's a big skinny silvery box. It says Enchantered. On the front it says, when a dark and powerful evil, capitalized E on evil, usurps the land, grasp this reliquary, sealed within, find the wisdom that can guide the brave novice who shall be hailed Enchanter. And the game, or the box, opens up differently than you think. Like when you look at it, it doesn't open from the sides or the top or whatever. The front part has a big shattered die cut, as if it's like a mirror that's been shattered and you can look through it, and that reveals some of the packaging on the inside, and it actually opens up by like dividing on the top and the bottom, and it sort of unfolds in the front. You're, like you're opening it up. Like it's hard to describe, but it's awesome. It's like you peel away the shattered mirror to reveal the goodies inside. And the goodies inside are inside a really beautiful sort of blue and pink folio that is also itself die cut. So it's got a fancy circle and a big E on the front, and it opens gatefold style and has a neat like crown folded die cut things inside. Like they clearly went all out on the packaging. Like it's just amazing with all the little shapes and things cut out of it. The inside's also highly rewarding. It's got the usual stuff. Here I've got my owner's warranty card, my super peely labeled Enchanted disc, and my microphone that I thumped, and a neat little notice saying Infocom is preparing to take over the support function previously provided by the Zork users group. Infocom will soon have maps and InvisiClues hint booklets for all their games available to those who need or want extra assistance. So it's neat. So this was published right at the time. I guess they were transitioning over to offering those things themselves.
Right. This game, just since we're on the subject, was not never mentioned in their newsletter, the New Zork Times, because this came out early enough that the newsletter wasn't established yet.
Wasn't even a thing, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it's got a little note about other games that either exist or will shortly be existing that you can say are worlds and welcome to them. So it talks about Zork 1, 2, and 3, Deadline, Starcross, Suspended, Witness, and Planetfall, although I think some of those are talking about them in the future tense. Has a little Apple II reference card. And then the two big things that come in that are both absolutely gorgeous. A very large, very thick, four-page booklet that is the instruction guide with a ton of very fancy writing in the front, fancy enough that it's actually very difficult to read. First, I look at it and go, like, is this orcish or something? But it's human. It's just so fancy, it's hard to read. And then inside, it's got the Orders Guild and the handiwork of the Scriveners, and it's basically your instruction booklet. And it also talks about loading your bow at the Fletcher's Guild, and just really neat. Like, it's a truly lovely bit of documentation. So it's not just useful, it's neat looking. And then there's also a bit of parchment, very large page that's been folded in half, like the top fold down, bottom folds up, and a wax seal has been applied. And on the outside it says, if you truly are the one brave enough to face unspeakable peril, let your wizardly powers reveal our words. And you can break the seal, and then inside is information about the spells that you start off with. Mine has the wax seal still applied, so I didn't break the seal, so it still is still, but the glue on it, it has sort of oozed out and is yellow. Unfortunately, these were not designed for long-term stuff. So I just sort of peeled the sides open, and I could read it that way without actually breaking the seal. So I cheated. It's lovely though. The packaging is really, really lovely. It's from that era where they were really using the packaging to set a mood and do more than just give instructions, but to set tone and to get you excited about the game. And just from a marketing standpoint, look like these are your graphics and this is something beautiful and physical to hold in your hand. And in some ways, they spent the money on that instead of designing graphics for the actual game. But lovely packaging. A+, adore it.
So
it's just too bad mine's in such bad shape.
I feel, I don't know, kind of confused by that because, I mean, I've only seen the description. I've heard your description, and I've seen pictures of the packaging online. And sounds like it's a large package with some parchment in it. It seems like really weak in the feelies area. I mean, you've got a map and some parchment, and it's a wax seal. It's,
sure,
but doesn't sound very exciting.
For me, probably people were disappointed because it's only a little bit of stuff, but it's so well done. And I don't know if maybe originally there was other stuff in it. Like, this was what's in mind. Maybe for all I know, it came with a ring or actual magic or some food. I don't know. But this is what came in mind. And it wasn't something that I opened. I got it ages ago, but it was already open. So I think it's complete, but I don't know. But it's about the quality of it. And just the things are really big, and that wax sealed page opens up. It's not like just a single page. It opens up into like a poster size thing that's been done by hand in calligraphy and had a wax seal on it. And so it's not a lot of quantity, but a whole bunch of quality. That's what I say. I dig it. Maybe other people would be disappointed, but I thought it was fantastic.
Good. Excellent.
So there.
All right. I'll allow it.
So we'll talk about the game.
Let's talk about the game. Let's do it.
So I liked... And went in with a bit of trepidation. I thought I wouldn't like, but it turns out I really did like, these RPG elements. So, like we said, the setting and the atmosphere reminds me of Zork because of the fantasy element, but it adds this whole role-playing game thing on top of that. So not only are you solving puzzles and, you know, finding some items, but you've got this spell book that you can find spells, you can write them into the spell book, you can memorize them, you can only have so many spells memorized at a time. Certain spells can't be written to your spell book, so it can only be used once, and so you have to think, well, when will I use that spell? And I really liked that element. You solve a lot of the puzzles by being an actual magic user. So it's much closer to like a little solo D&D campaign than Zork is, because it's not just about, you know, find the treasures and bring them to the treasure room. It's cast spells to solve problems and defeat monsters. And I really liked it. Didn't so much like the fact that you have to keep track of, you get thirsty and you get hungry and you have to sleep, so you got water and bread and so that ticking clock aspect, and the fact that the inventory is limited, I didn't really like that stuff. But the spell aspect and the RPG aspect, like, I loved that.
Yeah, agree. The spells were a really neat differentiator from other games I had played, I think, that had come out before this. And it does have that annoying thing that they were trying for a while, where you have to maintain you have to eat and you have to drink and you have to sleep, which I didn't find quite as annoying, because in this game you dream and you might sometimes learn important things during the dreaming. So I thought I enjoyed that part of it. But I mean, I loved, it was a good story. I loved the writing. I had to look up several words. Reliquary was the first word that I had to look up. But there were several 5-cent words in this game. And it was good. Let's see. Stats-wise, this game had 74 rooms in it. The average Infocom game has 81. A vocabulary of 723 words. The average Infocom game has a vocabulary of 976. Although I did not feel limited by the vocabulary at all.
Not in the least. So it had what I consider an ample and sufficient vocabulary, regardless of what the number is. It had everything I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And had 33 objects, where 44 is average for an Infocom game.
So interesting that it's technically below average in each of these stats, although you and I have previously talked about how in some ways we prefer a game that has fewer rooms.
Yes.
When it just things are spread all over the place, I'd prefer the same number of puzzles in a smaller map, in a sense. I don't want to be tiny, but, you know, fewer rooms is often the better way to go.
Yeah, more limited scope. And another stat I was looking at, on archive.org, there is an Infocom cabinet file filled with the stuff, data about Infocom and Infocom Games, I was looking at some sales data, and I found this interesting chart about percentage about Invisiclues sales. And there is this one chart that has Invisiclues sales as a percentage of all-time game sales. So basically, the higher the Invisiclue, I think of it as the higher the Invisiclue sales are, the harder the game is, right?
Yeah, and especially as a percentage of like how many people buy the game and then require the Invisiclues.
Right. So I don't know if there's a stat I'm doing every time, but I happened to look it up for Enchanter, and as of whenever year this chart was made, Enchanter sold 30.5% of buyers ended up getting Invisiclues, which, let's see, Zork, for just comparison point, was 19%, and so Enchanter was 30.5%, and it looks like when we get to Sorcerer, that one's going to be hard because that's 39%.
Oh my goodness. Well, then again, these percentages are also probably artificially high because I suspect a lot of people didn't buy the game, but they just bought the Invisiclues.
That may be true, yeah.
And they needed the Invisiclues because they hadn't paid for the game.
Right. That's probably true. They thought of these things, though. In the memo that accompanies it, it says things like Invisiclues sales lag game sales. So in some cases, we see more Invisiclues sold than games, which that may not be the only reason. But yeah, in 1985, the deadline Invisiclues sold at 600% of the actual game.
So what people they're still plugging away at it, like, yeah. Oh, I give up. Right. Give me the Invisiclues.
Yeah. So either it was pirated a lot.
I wonder if they took that into account too, because if you make the game harder and it requires Invisiclues, you might get that extra sale, which artificially boosts the cost of the game. Can be a, I don't want to say slippery slope, but I'm going to say slippery slope. Mm. Oh, look, I said it.
You said it. You super said it.
I said it.
Yeah. So anyway, it looks like kind of small, relatively small number of rooms and objects, but it didn't feel small. I thought it was perfect. I really did.
And I thought more than some games we played, a fun use of secret areas and hidden rooms that were kind of fun to discover, and not in the sense that I'd look at the map and go, well, there's obviously something here. It was more you find some information in some sort of way that I'll be not spoilery about that will then tell you, oh, here's something maybe you should look into. I liked it. Mm-hmm.
And also great NPCs in this game.
Oh, one in particular. I guess we'll talk about more after the spoiler fence.
Yeah.
Two. There is a turtle and there's an adventurer, and they are both two of my favorite things I've ever encountered in Infocom. All hail the turtle. I love the turtle. Oh my gosh, I would just play more games just with the turtle.
Right. Yeah, I want to play with the turtle. I want to be the turtle. I want to just hang out with the turtle. It was awesome. And the adventurer was also fun.
Fascinating that it was relatively early in Infocom games, and they're already kind of playing with the idea of the adventurer. So I liked it very, very much. And the turtle, so good. Reminded me a bit of animals we've encountered in other games, like particularly in Trinity, but in no spoilery way. But I think the turtle was probably my favorite part of the game. I loved it. I loved the turtle.
Yeah. It was good.
I agree. And also, you had mentioned the sleep stuff. I wasn't that keen on the fact that you have to basically keep track of your bread and your water, your food and your drink, and you get thirsty, you get hungry, and one of those is a limited thing, and so kind of an artificial limitation on the game. Didn't think that much, but I liked the sleeping. You get tired, you have to sleep, and it kind of, it almost like it divides the games into chapters, like because it's like the next day, and so you get tired, and you have a little, you go have a little bedtime, and maybe you have a prophetic dream, and you kind of wake up and continue playing. And I kind of liked that division, so I actually liked that bit. It wasn't divided into chapters as much as like Border Zone was, mm-hmm. but it did seem like they were natural divisions to the plot of the game,
right.
And sort of natural stopping points for me to kind of take stock and evaluate. Right. Do I want to go back?
No,
and
I like
redo that day?
Yeah, because you could wander around. You could play Zork for ages, literally forever. And there's really no sense of, have I been here? Has my character here been doing this for an hour or for a day or for a lifetime? And
in a sense, you level up each day because you can memorize an additional spell each next day. So you're leveling up very quickly. But it does mean there's a difference. There's a motivation to sleep and move forward. But you can only do it so much. And I dug it. I dug it a lot.
Me too. I found this game I found it funny. I laughed a lot at this game, and I copied a paragraph I would like to read to give an example of why I enjoyed this game so much.
Excellent. Read us a story.
Standing in front of you, to the north, however, is a door surpassing anything you could have imagined. For starters, its massive lock is wrapped in a dozen 6-inch thick iron chains. In addition, a certain 5-headed monster sporting razor-sharp spears for tongue seems to be embedded within its heavy oak frame. One is almost embarrassed to mention the gargoyle spewing flame and sulfurous ash which ornament either side of the door, or the 97 slimy groping tentacles which taunt you ever closer to certain death. A sign, floating serenely above the door and glowing hideously in purple letters, offers the following rude understatement: don't bother.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And even the solution for getting past the door, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Dug it. I really like the puzzles. I thought there were a lot of fair puzzles, but lots of humor. Lots of humor in the writing, in the descriptions, in the way you solve some certain things. The turtle, back to the turtle, so funny. Love the turtle. Tons of humor in this. With one kind of weird exception, don't want to get spoilery, but there's this one kind of dark scene late in the game that was really dark, and I guess it was trying to up the stakes or something, because it's it can be a fatal scene, but it seemed almost jarring with the tone of that scene. But the rest of the game, very funny, relatively light, neat spoil, although lots of sense of danger and stuff.
Sure.
I like even the basic idea here, like there's a fundamental humor to the basic plot, which is, you know, there's this Krill, this terrible evil wizard, is doing terrible evil things. So the Circle of Enchanters have to, you know, do something about that. And the worry is, if they send in a powerful magic user, then a Krill will notice that they're there, and things will go poorly. So instead, they send you, basically somebody useless. And the idea is, well, you have some magic, you're so low, you will slip under the radar. You won't even be noticed. Mm-hmm. And I like that as a basic plot idea, that you are a total noob, in you go, take on the super bad guy who's got, you know, massive monsters and things, and your advantage is you're almost beneath notice.
Right.
Go.
Yeah.
And I like the setup.
Yeah, me too. And if you die, you don't just die. You're whisked back to the Circle of Enchanters who sent you there in the first place, and they kind of take a deep breath and just like, okay, you know, this guy's the noob, we're going to send him again. And they'll do that a certain number of times. So I kind of like that.
Me too. But you're right about the humor in the writing. There's a lot of funny here. Laugh out loud things, but also just that kind of general humor to it into the tone and the phrasing that kept it, like sort of that tickle you humor all the way through. Like, just it adds to so much to the entertainment of it. Just such an entertaining game.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Regarding the dark scene that you mentioned, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I know what you're talking about. And after I finished the game, I read up about it, and the digital how do you say this word, Carrington? Antiquarian blog, that blog had a great post about the game. And that scene, the dark scene, was prophesized in Zork 2 or 3, I'm not sure which, I don't remember now, which we haven't played yet. So that scene, basically, they had to use that scene and that exact text of the scene, which had been written previously and kind of retconned into the game. And so they kind of had to use it. And they kind of built the whole game around that. We have this scene we have to do. So that's
interesting. I did not know that. I will always, after we're done, I go read the digital antiquatiquatiqua because it's so good. But I normally wait until we've talked about it, so I don't get, because it's so good, I will be influenced.
Sure. Yeah.
So I wait.
Yeah. And I think he says that specifically. It's like it has a different tone, this one scene. Well, because it was from a different game.
Right. Okay. Because that's exactly how it felt to me. Still a good scene and amps up the stakes and all. But I found it kind of jarring.
Let's see. What else? So did you finish? Did you win? Did you cheat?
Yes, I did. I finished. I won. I cheated. Yes to all of those things. I would love to say that this is the one I finally got through without looking up stuff. I had to look up stuff. When we go after the spoiler fence, there were two in particular, and they were back-to-back puzzles. So frustrating. I finally broke down, kind of bit in the game, and had to look up an answer and get help on a puzzle. Mm. And then, like, the very next thing I had to do in the game, I had to look up an answer for that one, too. And I thought, oh, I've reached the stage of the game where it's too hard for me now. But it was just those two times. So I had to look up two things, and that's it. But they completely stymied me for the longest time. And I did not find the game easy. This is a difficult game, but I just spent a lot of time with it to let it sort of sit in me and come back to the game after breaks.
Right.
How about you? Did you finish? Did you win? Did you cheat?
I finished. I won. I cheated. This is the least. I cheated very little. This is the least I have cheated on any of these games, exception Sea Stalker. I figured this game out myself. The only two times I cheated was when I used up a spell on the wrong thing. And although it seems like you solve the puzzle, then later on there's a problem you can't solve because you've blown your wad. And I did that two different times and found that frustrating. But I basically did very little cheating, and I was proud of myself, and it's probably the least cheating.
I'm proud of you too.
Probably the least cheating I will ever do on one of these games.
Until we get to Sea Stalker 2.
I felt it was fair. I
completely
felt it was a generally fair game. There was nothing that didn't make sense in terms of it wasn't nothing random. Oh, you need to shake the magic wand over by this particular thing, and you know, it all made sense.
Yeah. Even the first of the two puzzles I need to look up the Invisiclues hints on, once it sort of told me what it was completely obvious in retrospect, so it was a completely fair answer. Just for some reason I had a mental block on it.
Right.
Yeah, boo to that. But I loved it. I thought it was amazing. One of my favorite games that we've played so far, and I would highly recommend it. So if you're playing along but you haven't played this one, do not pass the spoiler fence. Like, for this one in particular, total fair game. I'm not sure how it's rated because it's old, so it's not really given a...
Yeah, I don't think it had an
advance or whatever. So right. It's not that difficult. I think it would be a game that somebody could play and tackle as their first game, much more easily than
Sea
Stalker 1.
Yes.
And highly rewarding, highly entertaining. Like a real example of a high point of Infocom of the games we've done so far.
Absolutely. And this is certainly more... I love this game. It's probably my favorite, and certainly more accessible to a beginner than other great games like... Trinity is a great game, but it's got some weird stuff that you kind of need to be an advanced Infocom player to deal with.
I agree.
Yeah, this is
and good. It's hard to compare them. I think I would pick Trinity of the two to say I preferred that game, but they're not really a comparable experience. Very different in tone, very different in the way that it leaves you after the game, very different in setting. Like, they're really, it's comparing essentially two genres. It's like, do you like this science fiction thing or do you like this fantasy thing?
Right.
And they're very different. I like the humor of this, my favorite. I mean, we've played some really funny stuff. Ballyhoo was very funny, but this is sort of my humor. I really found this funny.
Right. Yeah, and I liked the spell. I mean, we sort of for a game about spellcasting, we sort of glossed over it. But I really liked the spellcasting aspect. I thought it added a whole new gameplay aspect that, you know, instead of spending your time manipulating objects, you spend your time doing spells on things and people and places and trying to figure out, you know, and just watching things, what goes wrong when I use the wrong spell on the wrong object?
Exactly, which can still give you hints of when to use that spell or what would be the right thing. Exactly. And I really thought when I read about the game, I wouldn't like the spellcasting aspect. So if you have that reaction, dear listener, if you're thinking, yeah, I don't want to play a game that's more like an RPG thing, it's not. It's just, they're really good spells. You don't have to memorize a whole bunch of, like, each one is just, you know, five or six characters. You keep a little chart, and they're fun, and some of them are funny, and they're just great ways to try different solutions to things. And it actually was really, really well implemented.
Absolutely.
I dug it, so I highly recommend it.
Me too.
So I think we should hop over the spoiler fence.
Yes.
I would like to do the spoiler fence as like a double fence. I have like a small spoiler that I want to give that I think that didn't affect me, but when I read about it, I thought, oh, I bet a lot of people get burned by that.
Okay.
So I think we should have like a minor spoiler fence.
So this is like one of those little garden fences. Like the
spoiler
like
curb.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. You can have a spoiler curb first. So you should stop listening now if you don't want any spoilers. But I'm about to give one spoiler about where a way in which to not use a particular spell. Because it'll be very frustrating if you do it. So don't listen if you don't want any spoilers. But here comes the first minor spoiler. I did not do this because of Dungeons & Dragons experience, I guess. But I can see a lot of people doing this. Do not cast the light spell on yourself. Because if you do, you will glow and give yourself light for the rest of the game. It will not wear off, and that's really convenient, except there's a part of the game where you will require darkness. Mm-hmm. And in reading about it, it's easy to not know why you keep failing in that room, and it doesn't come early in the game.
I did the same thing. I was like, I'm brilliant. I'm going to always have a source of light. I'm going to be the source of light. And then, yeah, I had to restart the game.
I didn't, because I knew I don't always want to be a source of light. I maybe want my light to be in a different room, so I don't cast it on myself. But I can see a lot of people getting burned by that. So you did get burned.
What object did you ultimately use as your light source?
What did I use? Not my spell book, which I was going to do a while, and it didn't work. And not the spoon. Anyway, let's do the hard spoiler fence now because I want to. What's with that spoon? You know how long I spent trying to figure out.
All right. This is the actual real spoiler fence. Do not listen past this point.
I complain about the spoon.
Do not listen past this point if you don't want to be ruined forever for playing Enchanter.
Ruined for the spoon.
Ruined for the spoon. All right. Goodbye, listeners.
You don't
want
to know about the spoon anyway. Right. Goodbye, listeners. We hope to hear you have you listen to us at some point in the future.
Okay.
Oh, and check the show notes to find out what our next game is, which we don't know yet. So you'll know it before us.
What was your deal with the spoon?
It does nothing.
Yeah.
But you think it would be a thing. Like, it's just like long and figure out, like, what, like, as you go in this room, and there's basically two things in there. What else was in there? There was a spell. It was in the secret room behind the loose block or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you find the XX spell and a silver spoon. And it's like, why is there a silver spoon there? Like, you can take it. For no reason at all.
No,
it's basically
there was
like
totally
a leftover
reason.
Treasure.
That was the spoon that people who were in the prison were trying to use to dig a hole out.
Yeah, but I do think you'd have to do something with it. Like, I'm going to need it to solve a puzzle. I'm going to need something. And like, for the longest time, I could think, well, I haven't used my spoon yet. It turned me into the tick, basically.
Spoon!
So you do nothing with the spoon.
No, you don't. You're not. I tried digging.
Yes.
I tried continuing the digging the hole with the spoon, and that didn't work. Okay, so let's talk some spoilers.
I love the turtle.
Turtle was good. So turtle, turtle
to go
is
back to the turtle.
So you have this. You have this. This spell that is lets you talk to animals. And there's a couple animals around. There's some frogs that you can talk to, and they're kind of fun. They give you a little hint that's useful. But then the turtle, he's this kind, friendly guy, and he'll talk to you, and he'll follow you around, and he'll do things for you.
He'll do stuff, and he's got a real personality, like the way he talks. Oh, I love the turtle. How's that? Look at this thing, really. He's always so good. So good. He was so... I just want to keep the turtle. Like, the turtle was great. The turtle should have just been in all future Infocom games. I fell in love with this turtle. Just because of personality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just, like, genuinely felt, like, bad for just, like, the world when I accidentally got the turtle killed.
Yep. Well, and that brings up one of the things I need to use a hint on, which was using the turtle to go fetch the scroll from the what's the thing through the engineering room, the control room. So in retrospect, totally obvious, you know, use the XX spell or whatever, make it quick enough to get through the area, and then if it sets off the spears, they'll just bounce off his shell. So awesome, but I just had this mental block. I, for some reason, didn't think. And we just played a game where you're using things to fetch, and I don't. I have no idea why I blocked on that, but that's one of the things I had to look up info or invisi clues on. And I felt like I couldn't believe when I started getting a hit on it, like how since obvious the answer is, and yet I just, for some reason, couldn't come up with it. Oh, I felt dumb.
Yeah, I worked on that puzzle. That puzzle was hard. I worked on it for a long time. First, I was just trying to get into that room myself, and I could get into the room, yep. but then you can't get out of the room.
Exactly.
And I could send a turtle into the room, but then I couldn't.
He's too slow.
Couldn't figure. Well, I did. I figured out the XX. I sped him up and got him in there, but then I couldn't figure out how to get him back out, which is just ridiculous, because all you need to do is wave at him, and he comes back.
And he comes. It summons. Yeah.
At one point, I got both him and me in the room together, and then we're both trapped there.
Sorry, I did this to you, but at least we died together.
Trying to ride the turtle out. Yeah. You know, just. Yeah. That was.
I mean, it was still quite fun. Like, because I was still really enjoying the puzzle and the games. But I that's one of the ones where I had to look up an answer or look up invisi clues. I felt so bad that I had to look up, because that's not that difficult a puzzle. And then it was the one exactly after that, like the very next thing you have to do is that get captured and sacrifice part, which we should also talk about, because that's the scene that I think is
the dark.
Very different in tone and like complete. So it makes sense now that you say that it was actually literally from another game. But I had to look up that one as well. And I don't know if it was because I was frustrated because I couldn't figure out the turtle thing, or it was just that the scene was darker and you're getting sacrificed and stabbed. And so this is not as light a game as it used to be. Like using the, what was that? The Osmu spell or whatever on myself was like obvious in retrospect.
Right.
But I had a mental block. I had to look it up. And then it was like this blow to my ego, because it was two puzzles basically back to back that had defeated me. Hmm. I was like, oh no, this doesn't bode well for the rest of the game. But then those were the only two I had to look anything up on. I mean, I spent a lot of time on some of them, but those are the only two that I broke down and looked up physically. Mm-hmm.
I liked the once I figured out that I could survive the death of being stabbed, and then you get an object that you need, which is the sacrificial dagger. And then I was just like, what happens if I die again? So I stashed the dagger and other stuff, and then managed to get myself executed a second time. And that time they use a scimitar, but they don't leave it in you. The guy takes it along with you. So you can't just start getting
I did not do that.
Start getting
That's
a large collection. I was like, how many sacrificial items can I get? But just the dagger.
They had thought of that.
Two things I had to cheat on, like I said before, the spoiler fans, was both times I used a spell at the wrong time. And it seemed like it worked, and then later you're screwed because the thing you need is gone. I had to cheat to learn to use the Kolkad spell, which I have to look that up now. I've forgotten what it was. On the stair, get rid of magic.
To get rid of because the infinite staircase.
Right. On the infinite staircase, not on the box that's locked up with rope. You have to.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
You can use a spell to get the rope off the box and get the stuff out of the box and everything seems fine. But then later on, you don't have the spell that you need. And
right.
And the exact same problem. You're not supposed to. There's the Guncho spell, which vanishes a bad thing to another plane of existence. I Guncho'd the terror, but you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to trap the terror.
I know, with one of the best puzzles, trapping the terror using that magic map. What an amazing puzzle! That was so rewarding.
That was a good
and
puzzle.
Lovely.
And when I
just so oh,
yeah, when I
oh,
when I saw it. The map, I found the map in the map room. It was completely obvious to me what that was, because I'd already mapped that section of the game. And so what happens here, if you haven't played it, is there is a small maze-like area. It's not really a maze, but, you know, twisty little passages that you can map. And then later in the game, you find a map room, which has a map of the maze and a magic pencil. And it was completely obvious to me that if you draw on the map with the magic pencil, what would happen is that it would magically change the characteristics of the actual maze.
You can make passages. It also has an eraser if you want to get rid of a passage.
Right.
That's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
So good.
It reminded me of the book that we found in In Trinity, where it's the book of the game you're in.
Yes.
And here is like a map of the area you're in, and you can draw on your little map to make a new corridor or get rid of a corridor to trap this thing. It's what a great, interesting little puzzle
and wonderful
solution.
So although it was completely obvious to me what to do, the actual doing it I found very difficult, because there's this monster in there and you can't see it, and it moves at a kind of a certain speed, and if it ever gets into the same room with you, you're too terrified to do anything, and basically the game's over. And so you have to trap it and kind of intuit about how the game is moving the bad guy, and you really don't have much time. And I found it challenging. It was definitely challenging, but I managed to
Same with me, because it really only takes a few moves. Mm-hmm. But it took me quite a while to figure out the particular series of moves you have to do, because you do it in like four moves. But it was hard. I had to go over and over and over. But it was still very rewarding, because you know the answer that you need to get, and it's such a neat puzzle. And I just liked that it was so meta in a sense. Just very rewarding. I loved it. One of my favorite puzzles in the game.
Yeah, that was very good. So those are the two times I had to cheat, which... and apparently you're supposed to get one of the dreams you can get, which I didn't get. There's a dream telling you that you had lost something that you need. And basically that's,
no, I didn't get that
that's
either.
To tell you, hey, you screwed up. You used up the wrong, you used the spell that you're going to need later.
Okay, so you don't get too far into the game and then have to go back.
Right. I never got that dream, so I felt like I was missing... I don't know. Part of me feels like I wouldn't have had to cheat if I had seen that dream. I would have maybe figured it out. But
right. I didn't get that dream either, but I didn't even know about it until now. So only now do I feel like I'm missing out, I guess. So the egg, there was like the return of the egg. So there was this egg you have to open in Zork, which was frustrating because with the, I don't want to say how, because people might not have gone past spoiler fence on that one. But here we have an egg that you have to open up. And I spent a bunch of time on that as well, because you open up the egg and inside is a shredded scroll. So I think, first I opened it with the Rezrov spell or whatever, but it opens up and inside is a shredded scroll. So I think, okay, I've done this wrong. So let's just keep at it. And because there's also in the room, there's all these, there's buttons and switches and stuff. And if you figure out the right order, that will also open up the egg. Still a shredded scroll, because you're only ever going to get the shredded scroll. Because if you just get it and then move on, almost immediately you'll find the spell which repairs the scroll. But I'm assuming, no, I'm going to keep at this until this scroll, I get the scroll and it doesn't shred. I keep thinking the egg is opening in a way that is shredding it. I don't know. I spent ages on it until I finally just gave up and said, I'm going to just go on with the game just to play more and look ahead, and then I'll restore later when I have another idea about this egg. And then like immediately you find the Kreb spell or whatever, which restores the scroll. I was like, oh, well, that was many hours wasted.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
I'm sorry, Carrington.
Not as bad as that spoon, but whatever.
These are problems of your own creation sometimes.
They are. I loved the adventurer. That's another one we should talk about. There's basically an NPC in this, which is essentially you acting or you interacting with your character from Zork.
Yes.
So it's essentially, he's got the same lantern and the Elvish sword, and you look through and you basically peer into Zork and bring forward yourself from there, or like the character from then, and then you interact with it. And I loved how this NPC essentially is really neat, because he is obsessed with treasures and obsessed with getting your treasures and constantly. So what's that you're holding?
Are you using that?
Ooh, is that like,
what do you need with treasure?
It's so funny. It's such a funny use of that character if you've played Zork, which is basically a treasure guy. So here comes your character from Zork and you get to see it from a different vantage point.
And he's kind of
see it as this obsessed treasure hunter.
He's kind of an idiot.
Totally, so good. Oh, such, and again, such humor in that, like in the idea, in addition to the execution.
Yes,
I just adore. Yeah, I love that
they're playing with the tropes. I mean, it's only a couple of years into the existence of these games, and they're already playing with the very nature of
exactly. Now, I was a little frustrating that in the map room, sometimes the adventurer will take a thing that you need and like take the pencil or the map or whatever, and it's like, no, stop it. So you just say, give it back to me, but you got to watch it, because the adventurer will take off with your stuff and you might never get it back. So you got to keep your eye on that adventurer. But what a great idea though, to go and magically peer through into essentially Zork 1 and pull the Zork adventurer in, who is obsessed with getting your treasures. Yeah. It's just so good.
Yeah.
So good.
And for the most part, you can let him have it, because like I said before, you don't need him, you know. But, yeah, so.
Give him the spoon.
Yeah.
It's useless.
Yeah.
So I like the final confrontation with Krill. I thought that was cool, using your spells to defeat the dragon and then the evil being
but
thing.
This game,
and,
yeah, that's part, especially that part of the game, does not follow the learn by death rule. I mean, you have to know.
I was going to say, all it is learn by death and death and death and death over and over again.
Because, I mean, he's...
Except the dragon, that was the easiest spell. Because as soon as I got the Gondar spell, I'm like, well, that's an anagram for dragon. It's like the first thing I thought of when I saw that spell name. So I'm like, see a dragon. Oh, all right, I have the spell for that one. So that was like, wasn't even a puzzle.
Oh, I did not notice that the anagram at all.
Well, it's easier if you do notice it.
Sure, I bet. Yeah, so you have to know what you need, what spells you need to have loaded in your brain. And then once you do, it's actually pretty easy.
But you've got to know, like, you really have to go in and die a bunch of times and then know, okay, I'm going to need three spells, basically, and you will have to have them in your mind, memorized, and use them immediately. Like, there's no time to go in there and try. Like, you have to have learned by death, I think.
Yes, yeah.
But still, it was fun.
So basically, you have... I tried a lot of things in there with Krill, and you know, you try to use different spells on him or on his dragon or whatever, and I found it's not technically a bug, but it made me laugh. For my move, instead of doing a spell, I offered bread to Krill. It says Krill politely refuses your offer.
That's funny.
He's made me so. I mean, he's this evil guy, and he's trying to kill everybody and kill you. It's like, oh no, thank you. I'm not hungry for bread. Right.
Well, but he understands the bread. Like, unlike the water, you can get lots of water. You've only got this limited amount of bread.
Right.
So that's a pretty nice offer.
Sorry, I didn't win him over with my kindness of offering to break bread with him.
Aw. Oh. Good try, though.
Yeah.
So instead, just banish him out of existence.
That's right. Send him to another plane.
It's like, oh, I should have taken the bread. So I dug it.
I
gotta
it too.
Say, thumbs up. Everything about this game, I loved it. And I can see, this is a game that even when I was done, I can imagine I'm going to replay it. I wouldn't do it right away, but I'm sure like a bunch of years from now, after we're done all these things, and I think, oh, I feel like replaying an Infocom game, this is one I would come back to. I enjoyed it that much.
Absolutely. This is a great game. I mean, sometimes we ask, you know, does this game hold up? And some of the games are great, but... they show their age in various ways, even if it's just a lot of 80s jokes or whatever. And this one, I think, is completely 100% just holds up. It could be released today and people would love it.
Strong agree.
Yeah.
Strong agree. Yeah. Loved it.
Good. Excellent.
So I think we should pick another one.
I do too. I think
I've got a cold and I've got a weekend in front of me and I want to play a game.
Excellent. Well, why don't you pick it then? Cause it's your cold. You pick it.
I don't even have a list.
Mm. Too bad there's no like web network of interconnected computers that could.
There is. Let's play. I don't know. Let's play. Oh, you know what I want to play? Well, let me bounce this off you, and you feel free to veto it if you like it.
Sure.
I would like to play this Sherlock Holmes one because I love Sherlock Holmes stuff, and I know nothing about that game. It came out kind of late, so it's like we can jump forward and try a late Infocom game. Mm. So there's like Sherlock Holmes and the Riddle of something.
Okay, is that
Sherlock Holmes, The Riddle of the Crown Jewels?
That's not one of the not one of the graphical ones, though, right?
No.
So I really do want to save those for near the end of this series.
I say no, but how do I know that?
I'm looking it up. The Riddle of the Crown Jewels. No, this looks like a text adventure. Great.
Okay.
Let's do Sherlock. I do not, I don't think I'm going to enjoy this one, I got to say.
Oh, no.
No, it's fine. We're going to do them all anyway.
Are you not a Sherlock fan?
No, not really.
Oh, I love everything about Sherlock. I even watched that stupid Elementary TV show. I'm the one, in case you're wondering why they keep making that dumb show, me. Anything at all, in any way, even on the periphery, to do with Sherlock Holmes, I adore it. I love it. I watch all the crappy movies. I love everything about Sherlock Holmes. So, for me, I'm super keen on this one.
Excellent. I'll see. It came out, and just want to know when it came out. Based on trying to find it.
1988.
88. Wow.
Yeah.
excellent.
That's super late to be just text only.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, we'll play play some Sherlock and find out about those crown jewels.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick it in the spoiler notes, or the regular notes, not the spoiler notes, the non-spoiler notes, so that our listeners can play along with us.
Great. Wonderful.
So speaking of playing along with us, I will wrap it up by saying this has been Eaten by a Gru.
Eaten by a Gru.
Podcast. Eaten by a Gru. You should talk to us, dear listener, because we love to hear from you. And maybe Kevin will write you back. Who knows? So you can send us email, Gru, G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, or hit us up on Twitter, and maybe we'll start reading those on air, too. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. I also have a cold. We'd be ever, ever so grateful if you'd go on iTunes and give us a lovely review. 5 stars is my favorite stars. That would encourage other people to come join the fun. Show notes and stuff can be found at monsterfeet.com, and thanks to MC Frontalot for letting us use his Sweet Science as our theme song.
Science!
And we will... Science! Blinded me! Oh no! And we will play another Focom game and see y'all in about a month.
Excellent. Now, Carrington, you need to banish your cold to another plane of existence.
I've got a spell for that!
Excellent.
It comes in a pill form.
NyQuil.
NyQuil! But it's spelled weird. That makes it a spell. Mm.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
Oh no, thank you for letting me podcast with you. And I will see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Right. You like it and I don't.
Which works for me.